We're continuing our stewardship journey, and Nick has shared about the transformation that has gone on in his life by being a part of our congregation and allowing God to work in him. This morning, we're going to look at what Jesus says about greatness. And that's related to stewardship. It's not related particularly to money, but it's a part of money. But it's more about an attitude and the priorities we have that reveal the greatness, our greatness or Jesus' greatness. What would you consider greatness? How would you measure greatness? For yourself or for others? What gets somebody at the top of the food chain? What gets somebody at the top rung of the ladder? Well, when I was a young pastor, when I was in seminary, I thought, I want to be a great preacher. I didn't want people to say, well, you're pretty good. I wanted them to say, are you Billy Graham? But much younger? That's sort of what I thought. If I was a great preacher, then I would be a great pastor, a great person. When I got ordained, I sort of saw there's a pecking order in the United Methodist Church. And I saw that district superintendents seemed to be at the top of that pecking order. And I remember talking to a friend. We were at annual conference and we were in the back and we were looking down at the front. And I asked him, will we ever be down there with those guys? Because we thought, being a DS would be great. Because district superintendents have the ability to send pastors to good appointments or bad appointments. That's a lot of power. That's a lot of influence. And I thought, I'd like to be a DS. I'd like to be at the top of that ladder. Probably a little later, I thought, well, no, maybe even better than that is to be the pastor of a mega church. You know, one of those big things that look like a Sam's Warehouse? And thousands of people come in, and I'm their pastor, I'm their preacher, and that would mean I am great. I'm at the top of the ladder. Now, you may say, shame on you, pastor, for having such shallow ideas about success and greatness in ministry. And that would be appropriate. But I don't think I'm particularly different from you. I think if I asked you, what's a great businessman? A great businessman has a bigger business than somebody else. If you're working in a company and you have people over you, who's greater than you? The one who has more people under you. Maybe it's salary. A larger salary is always a better salary. Having more power or influence means you are greater, more significant, more important. That's what our world definitely says. It says that about business people. It says that about politicians. If a politician does well at the local level, he needs to move up. If he can make it on the city council, he might be able to make it in the state senate. And if he can make it in the state senate, maybe he can become a representative in Congress. And if he can do that, then a senator or a governor. And the great politician is the one who can get elected over and over again and get his policies enacted, even if they're not good policies. That's a really good politician. To get his pet projects approved, even if they're not good projects. That's greatness. I think many of us would agree with that in some ways, on some levels. I think our society says that. But we're Christians. And we try and look at what the Bible says and what Jesus says and teaches. And Jesus has a very different understanding of greatness. In our story this morning, it's sort of a third repetition. Sometimes in the Bible, there's sort of a... Sometimes he has to sort of say it three times for us to hear. Catherine, when we were dating, said, if you really want me to do something, you have to ask me three times. Now, she warned me. I remember once I said, would you like to do something on New Year's Eve? And she said, oh, no, no. I said, are you sure? And she said, well, no, no. I said, okay. Oops, I blew it. We didn't do anything that New Year's Eve. Sometimes Jesus has to tell us again and again to get through to us. And in the Gospel of Mark, three times Jesus says to his disciples, I'm going to be arrested, tortured, killed, and then I'm going to rise from the dead. The first time he does that, Peter says, no, 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 Jesus, and he sort of takes him aside and rebukes Jesus for that. And Jesus says, no, 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 you don't understand, Peter. If you want to be my disciples, pick up your cross and follow me, Jesus says. The second time he says, I'm going to be arrested, tortured, killed, and rise from the dead, right after that, the disciples are on a journey, they're on the road, and they're arguing about which one of them is greatest. And now, again, Jesus has just said, I'm going to be arrested, tortured, killed, and rise from the dead. And the disciples, even the third time, they don't seem to get it. Listen to what Mark tells us. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came forward to him and said to him, Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask you. And he said to them, what is it you want me to do for you? And they said to him, grant us to sit one at your right and one at your right hand and one at your left hand in your glory. But Jesus said to them, you do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? They replied, we're able. Then Jesus said to them, the cup that I drink, you will drink. And the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared. When the ten heard this, they began to be angry with James and John. So Jesus called them and said to them, you know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Many of you have been parents. And you know if your child comes up to you and says, Mom, will you do whatever I ask? The answer is never yes. The answer is always, what do you want? Because you know what kids will ask. Mom, now that I'm 12, can I have a car and start driving? Dad, for breakfast in the morning, can I have candy? It's Halloween's coming up. I want to practice. No, no. And it's almost the same way that these disciples are coming to Jesus and saying, will you give us whatever we ask? And Jesus is no fool. And he says, what do you want from me? And now you understand why they asked it the way they asked. In the same way, your kids, when they say, can I have a car at 12, know you're going to say no. And they're trying to trick you, trying to get it, sneak it in there. And it seems as though the disciples are doing that. They know the right thing to ask is not, can we be above all the other disciples? And so they're trying to sneak it in. And Jesus says, you don't know what you're asking, because the way I get to my glory is by dying on a cross. And you don't want to be one on my left and one on my right. But the truth is, they are going to go through that kind of thing. They are going to be persecuted for their faith. And Jesus says, but it's not my place to give my right and my left to. And you notice what happens. Even Mark makes the comment. And the 10 were upset. It used to be the 12. Now it's the 2 and the 10. Because James and John have said, we want to be separate from them. We don't want to be treated like them. We want you to do something for us to put us, to raise us up. And I'm not sure why the 10 are upset, but they're upset. Is it that they think, how could these James and John think that way? We should be ashamed of them for trying to put themselves up ahead of us. Or are they really saying, doggone it, I wish I'd have thought of that. I'm sort of leaning toward the latter. That they're upset because they want to be first. And so Jesus uses this again as a teaching moment to try and help them understand. You would have thought the arrested, tortured, killed would sort of get their attention. But he uses this as a teaching moment, and he says, the Gentiles understand greatness, and their great ones are tyrants. Well, what that means is that Julius Caesar took over the Roman Empire and made it serve him, made it about him, that he got what he wanted from the empire. And that's what the tyrants do. That's what the people, the common understanding of greatness is. You win something, and it's for you. It's for your benefit. It gets, you win, and you get the booty. You get the prize. And that makes sense. But Jesus says, that's not my way. That's not to be our way. And he says, look at me. Look at my example. Whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. Why? Because Jesus is saying, that's the way I do it. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. Who better deserve to be honored and served and looked up to and given everything than Jesus, the Son of God? And yet he didn't. He didn't demand, he gave. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. When you think about what God is like, most of the time we think of God as powerful and in charge, and sometimes the stereotype of God is that it's all about him, that he wants us to obey him, he wants us to submit to him, but in reality, he does want that. But prior to that, he has served us. He has come to give to us. God is first a giver. And that's what Jesus is saying. He gives his life a ransom for many. Who could imagine a God who comes to die for his servants, for his subjects? And yet that's who our God is. And so what Jesus is saying is, if you want to be great, you become great not by getting, but by giving. Greatness comes not by getting, but by giving. That's very different. That doesn't make any sense unless you're a Christian and you understand the way of Jesus. Are you a giver? Are you a servant? We've got t-shirts that say For Fayetteville. And we've done that because we believe that's what Jesus is saying here. To give his life a ransom for Fayetteville. For many. And so what we are trying to do with that movement is say, we want people to know that we are for them, not that we're for ourselves. We want to focus not on what we can do for us, but what we can do for others. Because that's the way Jesus worked. And so next week, we're going to ask you to give, to sign a card that says, in 2019, we want to give because we want to invest our money in Carson and Allie, in our children's ministry, because they are pouring their lives into people like Nick and other shepherds who are investing also in our kids so that they will learn a different way of success, not by getting, not by accumulating, but by serving and giving. We want you to give so that you can be a part of what God is doing here in our church and for Fayetteville, as we do ministries out in the community like Fayetteville Samaritans or Square Foot Ministry or other things that we support. Because that shows that we get it, what Jesus is saying. Greatness comes not by getting, but by giving. Are you a giver? Are you a servant? Can you imagine what would happen to our church? What will happen to our church if people in our community believe we're for them? And that when they come here, they're welcomed. And when they come to our fall festival, that we're not there for us to get our candy, but to give them candy, to serve them, to help make sure they feel comfortable, that they're enjoying it. Servanthood is attractive to those who are being served. It's not so attractive to us who are serving. It's harder to get that. But that's the way of Jesus. Are you a giver? Are you a server? Greatness comes not by getting, but by giving. Amen.